Welcome to Creatives on the Rise, the podcast taking you deep inside the minds of creative entrepreneurs who've made the jump from part-time hustlers to full-throttle careers. I'm your host, Leticia Rising, and I'll be your guide through this journey. Hey, what's up? I'm back. After a bit of a hiatus, your girl is back with new episodes. For those of you who are new to the pod, first of all, welcome. Second of all, I just want to give you a little insight about how it goes down on the podcast and what you can expect. I started doing Creatives on the Rise 3 years ago. This will actually be our fourth year running. And I started it as a means to bring light to the conversations that I was having with my creative friends. They were creators who made the jump into their careers full time. And a lot of this started as side hustlers. And so I thought it would be good to get their perspectives on what it takes to not only make it, but to thrive as a creative entrepreneur. Since then, the pod has grown to include technologists, creators, entrepreneurs, investors, artists, and strategists from all types of backgrounds, industries, and careers, providing their insights on what it took for them to get there and what they believe it will take for them to get to the next level. And the podcast is a labor of love for me. And so after taking a bit of a time to align things personally and professionally, I'm happy to be back delivering this to you consistently. The podcast will, of course, continue to feature interviews from amazing entrepreneurs, but it will also feature solo episodes breaking down my keys to success as a creator and the insights I've learned on this journey through entrepreneurship and being an agency founder. So our last episode was in March. If this is your first time tuning in, then you may not know that I broke my ankle earlier this year during the snowpocalypse that impacted Central Texas earlier in February. I've dedicated the last few months to recovery, reconnection, and restoration because the injury itself was really a freak accident, but I ended up breaking my ankle in two places. It was so bad that they had to call a specialist in from another city to come and do surgery on me. And so restoration and recovery had to take precedent. And even in the midst of all of that, I was experiencing a creative block where it really just felt like I was going through the motions with a lot of things. And all that is to say, I took a break because I really wanted to give myself the space and opportunity to just get back to the center. And also, I needed to place my recovery first. And taking the break, right, there really wasn't any length of time that I sat down and said, I'm going to give myself 2 months or 3 months or 6 months, because you don't really know. When I decided to take a break, I took it with a commitment that I would do what was necessary to feel that fire again. I can't say what works for everyone, but I definitely know what worked for me. And it was doing absolutely nothing. As a creator, that's hard because one, I own my own agency and I have a lot of responsibilities to the clients of that agency. And also two, I'm a creator. It's what I fucking do. Our first goal in life is to create. That's all we do is create. So tasking myself with doing nothing was actually harder than you would think. Yet I knew that for me, getting back to the root of creation turned out to be, it was what I would need it in order to break through the fog. I did a lot of meditating, yoga, journaling, exercising, and I still do. I've also been really, really good at practicing grace, just allowing myself to be and giving myself space to think and process and create for the sake of creating. Because when I was younger, and painting. I wasn't painting because someone commissioned a piece for me. I wasn't writing creative briefs because someone had an idea. I was just doing, because that's what came naturally to me. And I was constantly practicing. I was constantly in a space of iteration, and I was always in a space of chasing my curiosities. And so as a creator, I didn't want to lose connection with that by looking at the monetization thing, aspect of things. I really just wanted to focus on creating for the sake of creating. And so I did. And also, you know, side note, this has been a really extensive year. We're still in the middle of a pandemic. Some of us are working more than we ever have, while also dealing with pretty unimaginable stress. And so it's okay if you're not producing. We are more than our work. And once I was able to separate myself from the idea that I always had to be creating or producing or structuring something, I was able to find my way back to the center. And through finding my way back to center, I was then able to reprioritize the things that I genuinely love to do and put those back at the forefront of the work. And it's all about having fun and creating. And the moment that it stops being fun, the moment that it starts to feel like a chore, then that's the moment where you have to take that break. You have to give yourself the space that's needed in order to get back to that place of pure curiosity and pure intention and pure creation. And so now we're here. I can't wait for you to experience this season, and the resources that we have for you, that the team and I are building, thinking about community, content, creation, connection, all of those things that everyone's been asking me to do for the last 3 years, but I was hesitant to do. We're doing it. And I'm excited about it. I'm excited to get back to the beginning and get back to the heart of why I started the agency, why I even started creating to begin with. And that is because I fucking loved it. And so, yeah, I can't wait for you to experience it. Today's guest, Janae Brown, completely delivers on the reasons that I love interviewing creators so much, because she exemplifies what it means to hustle and make a name for yourself on your terms. So hear more about Janae's story after the break.
Celebrity matchmaker and entrepreneur Damona Hoffman talks to today's most successful small business owners about what it means to carve your path, define success on your own terms, and build a business that satisfies you. We're deep diving into every aspect of being your own boss, the upsides, the downsides, and everything in between. This show is produced and sponsored by FreshBooks, the friendly accounting software that helps millions of small businesses not hate their accounting and stay on track of their business finances. To listen to the show, go to freshbooks.com/podcast or search I Make a Living on any podcast platform you're using right now. That's freshbooks.com/podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Storyblocks, a platform that makes it possible for creators to keep up with the growing demands for modern video content so you can bring all your stories to life and stop sacrificing your vision due to time, budget, or resources. Affordable subscriptions, unlimited downloads, and royalty-free demand library means you can make the content you want without sacrificing the quality of your product.
I'm really excited about the Storyblocks platform because we've been able to utilize their stock videos to create content that resonates with our audience and entices the listeners to go on this journey with us, while also delivering high caliber music and audience insights that really take things to the next level. I think every creator should have a plan. To create a subscription, go to storyblocks.com/rising to sign up. That's storyblocks.com/rising to sign up. So excited for today's guest, Janae Brown, joining us from the Brown to Perfection Agency. She's a marketing event planning pro from Harlem. Shout out Harlem. The Beyonce of marketing, as she is regularly referred to, has always had a passion for connecting people and music. She's been recognized by the public and her colleagues for her expertise all over Twitter and Clubhouse. Janae has been recently featured in major trade platforms like Adweek, Market Hire, Afrotech, and Morning Brew. After obtaining a bachelor's in business management with a concentration in music, she jumped straight to work and has worked with the best of them, including Sony, Columbia Records, and RCA Records. And there she's worked with names like Beyonce, Chris Brown, Usher, J. Cole, Tyler, the Creator, Bryson Tiller, her, and so many more. Yes, yes, Janae, I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you for joining me. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. Super excited to be here today. I love the whole concept of the podcast and just, you know, everything. We've been, you know, online buddies for a while. So super excited for us to finally connect and get to talking.
Yes, I love it. So I read the bio. I've read the articles. I mean, it's worth it, right? Like, I always love reading the bios because people don't talk about themselves enough, but the bio has it all in there. So I love your work. But for those of you who might be unfamiliar and who have been living under a rock for the last 2 years, tell them in your own words what it is that you do.
Yeah, so my name is Janae Brown. I'm CEO and founder of Brown to Perfection Agency. We are a creative marketing and event production company. We focus heavily on digital content strategy, overall brand strategy, marketing tactics, I mean, influencer marketing, campaigns, partnerships, you name it. Mainly for the company, I like to say, is twofold. So for a creative client, so that's, you know, artists, signed or unsigned, media personalities, people like that, or we also work with, on the other side, companies, from emerging to established corporations, lots of tech apps, and a lot of Black and Brown owned businesses as well, which I absolutely adore. We are a Black woman run and operated agency as well. So all of our staff are Black women and or Black men, but we only have like two guys right now on the content side. So as far as our strategy is concerned, all Black women so far. And yeah, I myself, marketing strategist, a speaker. I'm also now a startup advisor for some really cool tech companies too. Yeah, and I just really believe in marketing authentically, you know, helping people, companies, brands, you know, be the best version of themselves. I would like to say that is what I'm here to do. But yeah, that's me. And I throw parties too. Those are fun.
Yes, the parties are always going to be the best, right? Like, that's where you get your start at, and then it just kind of expands from there. So you mentioned strategy a lot, and you're a strategist. I'm a strategist. I saw you post something today regarding strategy. So yeah. let's go there. What is strategy, and why do people need it?
Essentially, in the the simplest way I can put it is an actual plan. And I think for some reason, a lot of times it's foreign to people that like things don't just happen, right? That successful brands don't just appear, right? Typically there's some sort of plan or strategy, even if accidental, you can trace back the steps and what got them from point A to point B. I'd say the wisest way to go about building a brand, launching something, anything, even if the brand is you, is strategy. Like you need to know, and strategy involves so many things, right? First of all, who you're talking to, right? Who are you actually trying to reach, and in-depth look at that. Because, you know, again, contrary to popular belief, your target is never going to be everyone. I mean, even the largest companies like an Amazon or a Target or Walmart, even they have their target customers, even though it seems like it could be for everyone. Like, no, there's target audience, right? Actually figuring out who you are as a brand, right? That's often a part of it. You know, what you represent, how you make people feel, what the purpose is, all those different things, your bottom lines. And then, okay, cool. How are we going to connect those two things? We establish what those two things are. And then how do we merge the two and make a beautiful brand baby? Like, how do we make successful? How do we make this incredible idea, product, song, service? How do we get it to the people that may not know how much they need it? How do we get it to the people that it's for, right? So that plan of action, that those step-by-step things is strategy. Like it's literally the how. And just, you know, instant gratification runs our world. So there's so many, you know, whether it's emerging brands, people who are DIYing, or it's like big clients, everybody wants like presto change your magic. Because it's like, I don't know, again, it's this concept.
It's here. Yeah.
But strategy is your friend. Strategy is all of our friends. Strategy is like that best friend. It's clutched, you know, like you utilize it.
I love that explanation, and I love the presto change-o, because a lot of times in marketing, right, clients will come and they'll say, hey, I have this amazing product, whether it's an artist or a creator, and they'll say, you know, I love that no one's checking for me. And then I like the other piece of, well, you know, we created this amazing product. We did all this launch stuff. We put it out there. No one's biting. No one's buying it, right? What do you say to that creator, that startup that has kind of did what they could, and it just didn't work? What's your advice?
Hey, let's go back and look at that strategy. If there was a real one, because I think another thing, again, people confuse strategy also even with like a content plan. Not exactly the same exact thing. Like content's part of it, right? But there's like more to it than that. You know, excuse me, creating assets and being like, okay, we're gonna post this day on Instagram.
That's not a strategy.
Like that can be a part of a strategy, but that can't be it. I mean, maybe, but even in that, it's like you would have had to already built up some sort
of audience. Yeah.
Like unless you have one of those things that, I mean, you would have to be reinventing the wheel. Something that is so great. And even then, again, you still have to get in front of people for them to know that this is an amazing thing and we should all hop on it right now. Right. So again, if you think you did all the things and no one's biting, then you didn't do all the things. There's no way. Right. I mean, and granted, the crazy thing about marketing too and marketing strategies is it's also very trial and error. Even when you have a strategy, like you still are going to have to tweak things. You're still going to have to test things. I mean, sometimes you really hit it right away, but rarely. That's also why strategy is important. It's not one thing. It's not, oh, we're going to post on Instagram, we're done. It's okay, what are we doing for the next 3 months, 6 months, even a year? How do we grow on it, right? How do we build on this? How do we keep putting it in front of the people that need it? Because let's say you do launch and you sell 1,000 of your products. Can you live off of that 1,000 products? Unless there was a million a pop, I mean, you can't live up to that. If you want a sustainable brand, you need to be able to, you know, inspire brand loyalty, get people to come shop again, find more people, just like the people who bought from you. Like you need, I mean, and of course there's ads and targeting and retargeting and all that stuff once you get there, but you have to have a foundation for things to stand on. Otherwise, as you've seen, I mean, we've even seen, you know, brands, startup brands go viral and flop within the same month. I mean, yeah, again, maybe they had initial sales, but then the next thing you know, there was no contingency plan outside of put the link up and hope people shop with us. Like there's no strategy to retain. There's no strategy to, you know, keep customers happy. There's no actual like heart and soul to the brand. Like what are our morals? What do we stand on? You know, all that stuff is marketing, especially in 2021 where everyone actually does care. You know, what is the background?
Who's representing them?
You know, like who's representing? What are you actually doing? Don't get me started on Gen Z because they want receipts.
And if you don't receive,
go find them, right? So I'm like, you wanna have
I'm terrified of Gen Z, but in a good way. Like I'm excited about what they're doing. So like taking it from that piece, because like you touched on instant gratification. With this being, everyone's been stuck in the house for a year and 4 months, which is way too long. We should be out of the house by now, but that's a whole nother conversation. In a time of instant gratification, and now you're competing with even more people, how do you as a brand or as an artist or creator, how do you differentiate yourself from the competition in today's market?
It's so crazy. I feel like so much of this, and maybe it's because this is the conversation I've been having with a lot of my newer clients, especially creative clients, is you got to find your people, right? Like you have to find your people. Like that whole finding your audience thing, I don't think we speak about it enough. Again, we're more so like make this look good aesthetically and pray that they come find us. You got to kind of go find them, find out where they are, where they're consuming, right? Where they get their music, where they get their music news, where they get their culture news, what they buy, their buying habits, where they like to shop, how they like to shop, what they do in their spare time, what they've done during the pandemic that they like or may have picked up on, what they're doing now that the world is open. Like you need to know all those things. And you know, buyer personas are usually, a lot of people use them for products, but I'm like, I'd use them for a creative too. Because like, what does your listener look like? Where are they from? Where do they live? I mean, all the
like,
what, you know, their educational stats. I mean, if you think of larger companies, those are the kind, that's the kind of data they're pulling, right? If even social media networks, right? You know, there's all this controversy about how much data they get from us, but I mean, look at that. Just to get on social apps, they know damn near everything about you. Like, you know, through whether it's through cookies or just the different permissions and things we agree to that we don't know we're agreeing to because we're not reading the whole document when we sign onto a platform. Like they know everything and are able to literally produce what we want, what we've talked about, what we've seen, things that are nearby, like can literally do that. So if you think about the fact that these large conglomerates need to do all that to get us onto apps that we probably get on anyway, because all our friends and people are on there and it's social. But if they have to do that, what do you think you as a creator are gonna have to do to find people and get them engaged? I also say do things differently. There's this T-Pain video that went viral recently and he's complaining. And let me not say complaining. He's voicing, you know, expressing how he feels about the landscape right now. And it's true. We have a million of the artists that we already have. We have a million of the creatives we already have. We have a million of the influencers, the media personalities, journalists, entrepreneurs, companies, products. And that's not to say that there's no room for you to do what you do, but you need to do what you do and do it well. Like we don't need to see the same thing we've been seeing. Like sure, get inspired by what you see, right? The greatest creators are inspired from another creator. But I think we're in a time where we just need to get more like really creative. Like I like to say, I'm like, okay, everybody's creative until it's time to actually do some creative shit. Like oh my goodness, where is the innovation? Like, why are we not, we have access to so much, so many resources, so much technology. Like, I mean, even myself, I felt, you know, more so recently, like a little, like I'm creative all the time and I'm really big on ideation. So like I come up with ideas really quickly, copy really quick, whatever. But I just felt like, ugh, like I don't feel like
going through the motions.
No, I'm like, it's like, I don't want to be robotic. I want to be like inspiring. I want to be innovative. I want to think of something that we've never done before, no one's ever done or never did it this way. And sometimes you really got to tap into other forms of creativity. Like I have canvases and paint in my house, like garden, like watch documentaries on stuff that maybe has nothing to do with like what you do. Like you want to go outside, build grass, go swim in a pool if you can, I don't know, take a walk, anything. But you gotta stay, I think, inspired. A lot of, I think the pandemic was terrible, but I think one of the gifts that we did get was that it forced people to do other things. I think perhaps now that the world is opening, it's the struggle between like trying to get back to a world that no longer exists, honestly. trying to like catch up, make up for lost time, but also what do we keep from the pandemic? What do we abandon? And I think all of the things that we did to reconnect to self, I think those are the things that we need to try and fit into our more outward life. Yeah, like we need to, I don't think we picked up those things by accident. I think that a lot of them should stay or be implemented. I mean, most people, a lot of people, not everyone, some people didn't feel creative, rightfully so, during the pandemic. But I do know some people who were like, this is the most creative I've been in so long, in a while. Because one, maybe there wasn't so much riding on my creativity. It was pure, right? Yeah. Or, you know, I just had the time. Or, you know, I felt so down, bad, and empty, I realized all I really had was my creativity to tap into. And so I think, yes, like, you know, knowing who you're actually speaking to and actually being creative, I think also, you know, trying to find the pieces that you need for your puzzle, actually sitting down and determining what it is that you need. Again, everyone's so obsessed with Instagram numbers. You'd be surprised how many people like, it's like, okay, so what do you want to do with this? Or, you know, what's your goals? And they're like, oh, I want 10K on Instagram. I'm like, okay, what else? Okay, like what else? Like, let's get back to like what the purpose is. All these other things and these apps, they're just tools. Yeah. They're just platforms. They're just things, great things that we can use to make it a little easier. To take an idea or something from point A to point B. So I think, again, setting realistic goals and then putting the pieces together. Do I need to hire people to do certain things? Do I need to build a team and we can kind of learn together? I don't know. I just think that there's a missing link between the idea, the expectation, and the work in between.
Yes, it's the work. It's the work.
A lot of it is just the work.
And discipline,
But a lot of it is work, discipline, resources even, right? Mm-hmm. I will not say that that is not an issue. A lot of times resources can be an issue, but most of the time when you tap out every available resource to you, then the additional resources show up. Mm-hmm. Most people are willing to help someone who works hard.
Always.
If you're working hard, the opportunities start to show up. If you kind of just kind of in, kind of out, kind of doing the work, kind of not, kind of waiting for a miracle to happen, like then, you know, you might not get that expectation. And I think instead of looking inward, self-awareness is a huge thing, I think, as anybody, creator, business owner, anyone doing anything extraordinary, self-awareness is key. Your other best friend, right? And so I think looking inward sometimes and really considering, like, am I doing everything possible to get there? Everything that I know I can do, everything that is in my control, am I maxing those things out?
Sometimes the answer to that question is no. And I feel that a lot of creators and small business owners aren't prepared to go there, right? They want to be able to point to something and say, well,
I just
don't have this, I just don't have that. When the reality is like you said, it could be that you haven't done everything that you can to make sure that it hits.
Yeah.
And that self-awareness and that accountability are going to be key and kind of...
So key. I've had to have the conversation with myself. I always say to people, like, I've never said anything to anyone, I don't think, that I haven't said at one point to myself or referred to something I was working on with. And I mean, I've had to have those conversations, like, because things are going to happen. And sometimes you've done everything you can or done everything, quote unquote, right, and things will still go wrong. But after that, what are you doing to make them go right again, right? How long
can't you stay there?
Yeah, you can't stay there. And I know sometimes it's hard because it's like, damn, especially when you did everything you're supposed to do. It's like, damn, but you can't stay there. You can't stay down. You got to figure out, okay, what's next? What else? And then if you do get into, you're like, okay, damn, I'm not doing everything that I could be doing. Let's, you know, break that down. Why am I not doing everything that I could be doing? How can I be doing it? You know, is there a reason? What's the blockage? What's stopping me? Do I need help? Like, you got to explore all that stuff. And I think, honestly, like you said, it's easier to complain, I think, than it is to, you know, avoidance is easy versus doing the work to attack a problem. And that's like anything in life, right? Like, avoidance is always the easiest answer. Like, you know what? I'm not going to talk about it. You know what? I'm just not going to do that. You know what? Whatever. You know what? I'll get around to it eventually. Or, you know what? Let me point and finger point the blame somewhere else. And I think avoidance is terrible. Avoidance, I think, is worse than procrastination. And often procrastination is actually probably avoidance. Most of the time,
you just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, you just don't want to deal with it because it's going to force you to have to face some stuff, change some stuff, get uncomfortable, do something you're afraid of. And I think that is what separates okay from great, though. I think the people, the brands, anyone who figures out, or let me not say figures out, who decides to push past fear, to face everything head on over and over and over again, even if you do take a break, rest, stop, pass out real quick, get back up, can't stay there, right? I think those people, they reach a peak at a certain point. You break through. It's like, you break through that ceiling. But I think you got to keep at it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people conflate stagnation and restoration, right? Like, you can rest to get your stuff together and restore and do what you need to do, and you should. It doesn't mean that you're stagnant, right? It means that you're resting, because even the rest can be progressive.
That's big key. Yeah,
that's key. And then you come back and you kind of start to grow. Do you think that the transactional nature of social media has helped or hurt the creative process?
Hurt. And I have this thing in my mind where I always go with my first answer, or I try to, when people ask me questions. And I'll say hurt, because people are not really creating. Again, going back to kind of what we were talking about a few minutes ago, like, people aren't really creating a lot of times solely from that core creative place, or to solve a problem, or to change the world, or to make
it because they love it,
yeah, or because they just love it, right? I just like to do this. A lot of people aren't creating from that place. They're creating from the place of, are other people gonna like this? Are people gonna buy this? Are people, we all do it to an extent, are people going to subscribe to this? Are people going to follow me off of this? Are people gonna listen to this? Are they gonna like it? It's not even just, are they gonna consume it? We live now in a complete like system. I'm doing this 30 days of documentaries thing where I'm watching a documentary a day, at least one a day, right? And two that stick out into my mind right now are The Creative Mind on Netflix. And in that one, it shows so many creators and people who do creative things across industries. And again, they either were to the point where they had no options and so had to create something different. They needed to do something in a more efficient or easy way, or they just love it. And they just create. They don't think about, and didn't, especially a lot of them when they started, they don't think about, oh, is someone gonna like this? How many likes am I gonna get for this on Instagram? Or am I gonna reach however many followers on Twitter? Or, you know, I wanna get, you know, 10,000 sales on this. They just create it because they know it's good and they believe in it. And again, easier said than done, because then I watched The Social Dilemma again, and you think about how much of our lives are tied to likes. You almost
that validation.
That validation, and you almost won't create because you get stuck in this perpetual cycle of, will people like this from me? What will they think? How will they feel? What if no one pays attention to it? Like, and that can hold you back for a while. I remember even putting out my content series, Brownie Bites. I had put it out in January of 2020, but I had the edited versions of that since like July 2019. Mm. I had it for so long, and I don't know what I kept telling myself was the reason why I wasn't putting it out. And then I remember it being December and me being like, oh my God, I can't put this, holidays now, that doesn't make sense to put out, you know, getting real markety with my own stuff. I'm like, that doesn't make sense to put out during the holidays, it's not holiday content. And I was like, maybe people will use it for holiday stuff and see and sales, blah, blah, blah. And I just got so frustrated with myself. And I was like, post the damn content, Janae. Like, what does it matter? You worked hard on it, you like it. And shit, if it doesn't have, if people hate it, cool, you don't have to do it again, but post it. Like, you know, I started talking to myself, like I talked to clients, like, what are we doing here?
Just do it, what are you doing?
So, you know, I posted it on January 1st, and I hate New Year's releases and launches. It's like a pet peeve of mine. I'm like, it's so lazy. I'm like, it's so cheap. You're just, cause you know, everybody, woo, New Year, new me. I'm like, it's so lazy. But I couldn't take it anymore. I was like, damn it.
I'm just gonna do it.
Push a button, and people loved it.
Yeah, they're very responsive to it.
Very responsive. And I was like, wow, okay. After like two more seasons. But like, I'll never forget that moment. And it made me think about how often I worry about how much innovation and creativity is lost behind all of our emotions being tied to validation and likes. And the idea that you could think not only your work isn't good enough if it doesn't get a certain response, but people think their selves are not good enough. Like, they talk about in The Social Dilemma a lot how even kids and Gen Z, like,
are internalizing that.
And it, I mean, suicide rates up are up amongst children, girls especially. Like, it's nuts. And I think, yeah, it's hurt creativity because, I mean, even consumption-wise, there's sometimes people not tuning into something because it hasn't gotten enough attention. How crazy is that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I see it, but it doesn't
because
have
the algorithm.
Looking past it, people are like, oh, how many, I mean, look at everything, look at music, how many views do you have? I like the song, but
what are your monthly streams? I'm not gonna share it because
and it makes sense because I get it. They need to know that other people like what you're doing so that we can make some sort of money off that. I get it. But again, just going back to then you're a creator, that's what you're thinking about. You're not thinking about making the best music of your life anymore.
Yeah.
You're thinking about taking what's in here and what's in here and just laying it out there. You're not thinking about just being your talented self. You are thinking about, fuck, how many likes am I gonna get? And like shares and views and like, I need this to go up. And I mean, I've seen people sleep on things, including myself, for years, because you get caught up in that and then you end up maybe not even doing it or not doing it as well as you thought, or it just, I think it sucks the joy out of it, right? Yeah. Like, kids. Like it was like, okay, you colored a picture. You probably show your mom. And like, that was the validation you needed. And she's like,
oh, she loved it. Yeah,
I love it. Here, put it on the refrigerator. And you were the happier. And then you went and created something else. Yeah. Now it's like, okay, y'all, colored a picture. Let me put it on Instagram story. My mom is the reason I think I'm a writer. Let me post it on Twitter. Are people retweeting, liking, commenting about me and my coloring book picture? Like, I literally have a coloring book that I color in, you know, when I need to just have a second. And I was like, could you imagine? But that's how the creator
that's what it is
right now. Yeah. That's who we are. So I think it does hurt. I think having, though, this much accessibility into people's minds, homes, pockets, eyes. I think that's fire. I think that's incredible for the creative community. Because if you do push past the validation part and consistently share your gifts to the people, the right people, your target,
your tribe,
and build that out, incredible things can happen. And it, when it moves, it goes fast. Like, you know, and you can reach millions of people, you know, with your stuff. I think that's incredible. But I think, you know, the way, the nature of it is just, the society is crazy. I mean, it's infiltrated everything from politics to medicine. Oh my goodness. What we put in our bodies, what we don't, what we eat, what we don't, where we go, what we won't. It's just.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you feel that because it's everywhere and it's infiltrated everything, do you feel like the psyche of the creator is more fragile than it's ever been?
I think ones who don't set boundaries between critics and their creativity, yes. I think you have to, as a creative, set a big boundary between the critiquing of your work and your pure creativity. You gotta kind of put that wall up, and easier said than done. But I think to be a creative person is to already be extremely sensitive, extremely in touch and in tune with everything around you all the time. So I think adding the fact that, you know, now the channel to share my creativity is social, digital, the internet, mostly, right? Media, okay. With that, though, comes the ability for all 8 billion or however many people are on Earth to be a critic. I mean, across the spectrum, all languages, creeds, religions, races, personalities. I mean, people hiding behind fake pages.
They will let it go.
I mean, they'll say anything. I mean, half the time they're not even saying things that make any sense or are actually valid. They just want attention or something. I don't know. It's weird. It's very weird. But I think if you don't have a boundary between yourself and, between yourself and that, yes. Yeah, I think it definitely is hard and an interference, a major interference. But I mean, if you can, you know, if you can just disconnect and create and then use it to share, because that's what it really is, then cool. Granted, you're a human, so you're going to see comments and things and, you know.
And it's still going to penetrate you.
Yeah, it's still going to penetrate, but you got to create some sort of distance. You cannot be obsessively tuned in any capacity. I think in that way, I mean, I say any capacity. You can't be obsessively tuned in to comments, critiques, and everything with a grain of salt. I mean, both the praise and the boos. Like, because I mean, we don't talk about that either, how people get completely psyched out by
They'll nail you, no matter who you are.
Like, that's the American way. I was reading, I ended up reading an article about it, but I first heard about this from Miley Teal, a CEO of Curl Box. And just, I think she just has an incredible mind in general. She was talking about how America has this cycle where they love the underdog, they love to root for you on your way up. And as soon as you get there, as soon as you get to the top, they're searching and scrambling for something to bring you back down to humility. Yeah, we put you up there.
We put you there. We're gonna bring you down,
right?
And then they start rooting for you again. It's again, weird.
Yes, but this is like an actual done. Like I guess like the PR psychological studies on it. It is literally the American way. This is an American United States thing, culture thing, where they do that. And like you said, then they're like, okay, we brought you back down. We start rooting for you. We'll uplift you again. Forgiveness, whatever. I mean, we've seen them do it to the
big. Kanye is a good example.
Kanye, he literally just came to mind. Kanye, Obama, like, it doesn't matter. You could literally feed all the children ever.
They'll find a reason.
They cannot wait to find something. And literally, it's like, you know, the same sword that they knight you with, they will knife you with. Like, yes. And so you can't hold on to that either, because I've seen that crush creators and business owners and whomever. It's like, oh, they were rooting for me and it was so great, and then I made a mistake or something wasn't perfect. Like simple stuff like that.
You're human.
Something, somebody didn't get their order on time, like all this, and then now it's like, oh, you are the worst thing ever. We should have never been rooting for you. You a fraud. Oh. It's incredible.
I love the fraud conversation, because it's like, but you were believing in them for a very long time. And then all of a sudden, this person just became fraudulent, you know? And I think that we don't really allow in our culture enough space for grace and, hey, I messed up. How can I make it better? And then allowing them to make it better and do the work. I feel that if you're doing the work, do the work, right? But we have to allow that space for forgiveness, because I know I haven't been perfect. Oh, Lord. But social media just wasn't around.
They just want that highlight reel, nothing else. And if you don't match that in some capacity, it's like a fit. I go out of my way. I say out of my way to remind people all the time that I'm a human being first. And so are you. So like, if I'm having a human moment, yes, I want you to know I'm having one, because I'm a person for real. Like, I'm not whatever you'd like to create in your mind about me is your business, but it's not necessarily mine. I'm a human first. I refuse to be shackled, you know, more than all of us have to be, in a sense, to people's ideals and to social currency, commentary, persona. Like, no, this is me. There really isn't a persona. Like, Black girl, Harlem, love marketing, yes, intelligent businesswoman, all that. But Janae, like, Janae is a human being, and like, multiple times a day, that's what you're getting. You're not gonna, you know, you can pick and choose who you want, which parts you like, but duality is a thing, right?
Yeah, so it exists.
Like, giving that grace and that space is just like, I don't know why we don't have it, but it's just not very popular to do so. It's almost like, you know, those quotes where they say, you know, people love you or whatever until the first time you tell them no, or when you tell somebody no the first time, you kind of really see how they feel about you.
Yeah, like, or a miscommunication reveals how people really feel about you.
It's like,
because if a miscommunication can send you to the, I don't trust you, I don't want to work with you, and it's like, it was a miscommunication.
You were feeling this for a while.
Like, oh my goodness. Well, okay. And I was on a call with Sahil the other day, and someone asked him a very good question. He's like, how do we know we can trust you? And he said, you don't, but if you can't trust me, don't work with me.
That's true. I like that. I like that. I mean, because ideally, you can't trust anyone, so you kind of have to trust anyone you're going to be dealing with in any capacity, because you can't. Literally, because you can't trust anyone, you have to decide to trust in this person, at least until they prove you wrong, right? Innocent until proven guilty. And even then, it's like, okay, you might have to double back, recover, whatever, regroup. But it's very true. Trust is, I love that answer because it's true. You can't, but you're going to have to.
You're going to have to. And if you don't want to, that's fine. I loved it by saying, like, I'm not going to prove to you that I'm trustworthy if my work, my effort, all of these things haven't proven that to you. Don't work with me.
Yeah.
And that approach, I was just sitting there like, wow.
I love that.
I loved it. And it stuck with me. I've been thinking about it for a couple of days of just thinking about that idea. Cause you know, in marketing and just incorporating clients see results, they're not happy. And then it has that conversation of, well, I don't trust that you're the team that can handle this, or that trust. And getting back to that space of, well, if you don't trust that I'm the team or the person or whatever that can handle this,
someone else,
then don't work with me.
Yeah, I'm really definitely big on that. And that's something that I've definitely learned over the past couple years is, I mean, two things. One, sometimes there's just not a great client. I think sometimes people usually have so much to say, I think, about service providers, but seldom do we talk about the nightmares a lot of times that we deal with dressed up as clients. Literal monsters. It's like, you know, a lot of clients sometimes will overestimate how structured or organized they are and you know what really is going on,
and then like, be mad at you because you're asking for clarity.
It's like, wait a minute, you asked me to come in this house and throw a anniversary dinner, right? I get to the house and the roof is falling in, it's filthy, someone else lives there on the house, you didn't tell me that. It's like, and the dinner is on Saturday. I'm sorry, today is Wednesday. You didn't give me all the tools that I needed to do this efficiently. Now we're literally working. Now we're doing all types of stuff to try and get the strategy done. And it's like, I'm sorry, the anniversary dinner was okay and not, you know, the whole neighborhood didn't come, but it still turned out nice. You still got whatever, but it wasn't exactly what you envisioned with the raggedy tools and stuff you gave us. Like, you know, it's interesting. In marketing, it's like we're firefighters, magicians, miracle workers.
And mothers.
Buddha, everybody. Moms, yes, absolutely. Educators, we're all these people. Business managers, like we're just, you are sometimes everybody. And it's just like, man, you don't trust me. I don't trust y'all. I'm like, I have so much in our client questionnaire these days. I'm like, I need to know. I mean, I go down to like birthdays and personality types.
Yes.
I mean, also with hiring, we do personality types and tests because I mean, it's important. Like I need to know as much as I can about how you handle conflict and, you know, how you communicate, what's the best way to communicate with you. I mean, literally, marketing is all psychology, but what's crazy is if you're client focused, you have to focus on the psychology of your client. Mm-hmm. Like, before we even get to the consumer. We gotta deal with you.
How can I put this in a way that you'll understand?
Yeah, so that we can move how we need to move. You're not in our way.
Conflict, no, do you not? Are you going to be? And a lot of people don't like conflict. I prefer, if you have an issue, let me know so we can move past it.
Yeah,
I don't like
confrontation, but I like communication. I'm like, tell me, let's get it over with, let's work it through, fine. I don't like, you know,
I don't like passive aggressiveness.
I don't like that.
I cannot.
It's terrible. And I think poor communication is often what leads to confrontation every time. I've never been in a confrontation that I can trace back to the root and say, everyone was communicating effectively here, honestly, openly, transparently, efficiently, and timely, and we ended up in a confrontation. No, there's always one or both parties missing stuff. So it's just so key. And I ride, like you said, passive aggressiveness is like, turns my stomach.
I've honestly speaking, I have released clients because of their passive aggressiveness.
Don't blame me.
Because that's not something that I can deal with the team, right? Of like having someone who's passive aggressive. We're not going to be able to move forward in a cohesive and effective way if you have an issue, you're not expressing what the issue is, and then you're sending everything back. Well, you're clearly not getting what you want, but you're also not telling us what you need.
And not listening to what we're trying to tell you that you need either.
That's so like, if you can't articulate what it is that you need, it's best for me to kind of, you know, release this and let this be a lesson. Like, we don't have to stay in these spaces just because you cut a check.
Yes. And I learned that. Another marketer that I really respect, I had to let them know that, like, you know, a client, because, you know, we were maybe going to do a collaboration at one point, I had to let them know, like, hey, I'm not going to be working with them anymore. I can do introductions or whatever you need, but they just weren't the best to work with. And they were like, yo, like, I'm happy that you put your foot down, because, like, people think that we're supposed to just take whatever because a check has been cut. That's insanity and not the answer at all. I also think, again, like you said, going back to, it's unhealthy for your team. Like, you know, we want to enjoy what we do. We relatively do. I mean, there's going to be parts that kind of suck, but I mean, it shouldn't be the whole entire experience down to the correspondence. And, you know, people do extra work for people that they like. You know,
that's true.
Like, if you are a person who, you know, you say good afternoon to the lunch lady every day,
you got extra.
No problem.
Hey, baby, here you go.
No, here you go. Have a great day. She's going to tell you about what we have tomorrow, stuff we got in the back.
We'll save you a plate.
I'm like, it's common human interaction here. Like, it's no different. The lunch lady is at work. She gets paid, but you also could get a terrible looking lunch. It's up to you, though, you know? Like, it's up to you. Like, it's totally up to you. And I think in agency world, I could talk about this all day, because I mean, you know, running an agency, you learn so much and you run into so much. And again, I think the outward conversations about agency life are very one-sided. It's only from a client perspective. And I'm always thinking, like, if y'all had any idea
what the agency dealt with before they got to that point.
Nine times out of 10, if it's a real working agency,
that client was taking them through pure hell.
It was not the agency. You can't give it to a different. It's like kids who are really terribly behaved in school. And, you know, they're a tyrant. They're terrible. Tasmanian devil damn near at school, right? Kids are kids. But you tell the parent and the parent is like, what? Not my child. No way in hell. My child would never do that. And it's almost like you wish you could have a little like, okay, hold on, freeze frame. And play it for them back so that they can see. And it's like, I wish clients sometimes could see themselves. You have not been nice.
At all. And one of the things that I've touched on a lot lately is clients go with the perception that you're professional, so you're not going to talk about it, right?
And typically you won't.
There are some instances where I'm like, if I were that person,
I swear.
If I
ever unload the clip, and it's so funny because sometimes it's like you're doing incredible work and people are like, oh my God, I love what you're doing with that brand. And then I'm just like, you in my mind, a fire. I'm like, thank you. You have no idea what we got to go through to get this. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Love the work. Appreciate that. But yeah, it is.
Wow. You know, 10 years of stress later, in a 6-month contract, literally there was a client we had that was so crazy that I threw like a Zoom happy hour for my team on the last day of the contract. Like, we took tequila shots on Zoom for real because it was that bad. Like, I was like, are we entitled to compensation? Like, this was Oh my goodness. And I'm real stuck on a lot of times sticking it through. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I like to finish what I start. And I thought it was a great mission also behind the company. So I was very adamant about, you know, us finishing, seeing the strategy through and as much as we can in this mess and, you know, making it happen. But I learned through that experience that honestly, you don't have
it's to. It's not worth it. You don't have to do it. I was just about to say.
I am not Sojourner Truth, Superman, whoever. I don't have to be
One
that.
One client took us through that and I stayed. And that is the client that taught me, you don't have to stay.
Yeah.
I will refund the money. I know, and that was the lesson. And so like now I'm very strict about, and I tell my team, like, you don't have to respond to them.
I
will. That's what I'm here. Because
a lot of times too, clients don't speak to, you know, I'm the head of the company. I'm ideally the first person they talk to, and maybe depending on how they found us, the reason, you know, a big part
that they want
to work, right? And so a lot of times we run into that too, where clients are very nice with me.
Mm-hmm.
I get a little funny with my team and I'm like, oh, see, that's not what we do here. So if that's going to be an issue, let us know. We can just end this amicably. Like, cause I'm not, what you're not going to do is mess with my folks. Like these are people handpicked that work really hard. Mm-hmm. Like, no. And again, I work with women.
Yes, especially.
Not on my watch. I'm not doing it. Talk to me like that. And let's see. You put it though. So let's not even go there. Yeah, there's so many different things. I think, again, it's not talked about. I also think that just having agencies is pretty popular right now. And I think a lot of people don't know. And granted, agencies are cool because you can build it out however you want, right?
Yeah. But there's work behind it.
There's work behind it. And there's certain structural things that will need to be efficient. And I don't know if enough information is out
there. Shared.
And it's hard because when you run an agency or work at one, you focus on keeping it running and working, right?
Yeah. And you don't have time to take that 10,000 foot view to say, like, because I've had my agency since 2016. It wasn't until the last 2 years that I actually had time to sit back and say, okay, now what are these operating procedures looking like? You know, what?
They're literal same. Starting in 2016, I always say I feel like the last 2 years especially was just so integral. Like yes, exactly what you said. Like, got our stuff together, figured out what was really needed to sustain it. I mean, it's a work in progress consistently and constantly. I feel like most agencies probably don't get their stride, like, you know, machine running. I'm thinking 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
10 years.
I'm thinking that too.
I'm thinking 10 years. 5 is good though. Like, if you can sustain that 5 and be like, 5 is pretty solid. But I think 10 is when we'll be like, okay.
Okay,
like,
we got it.
I ain't talked to nobody at the company for a month and that's okay. You know, like it's still running. It's okay because everything is, you know, together. But yeah, it's quite the journey. I do wish I think I said on Twitter recently, I was like, I need more agency owner friends. I have a lot of marketers in my network, but it's different.
It's a whole different conversation. We'll have a wine night one night. Off air, so we can really let the clip go.
Let it fly, right? Because I mean, you know, even other business owners, they can relate to a point.
Mm-hmm.
Agencies are like literally.
It's a different beast.
Yeah, it's different. And it's such a blend of things too, that it's like, in order to get a whole picture conversation, you need to talk to someone who, and I guess that's like anything, right? Like if you're a clothing designer, you could talk to other people in fashion, but they're not gonna get you like another designer would, because you guys are very much so on similar paths in that way, but.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that like over the last 2 years, I have started reaching out to more agency owners, because it's like, again, 4 or 5 year mark, that's really when you're starting to make that shift. You no longer have to be involved in the day to day. you know, you can kind of start your transition and focus. You're not the CEO and the founder, you're the founder and you know, you can start to play, right? But then it's kind of during that transition, having those clients who still want you, right? So like they're feeling that pull.
My assistant, my executive assistant, Ayana, who is incredible, just let me start there. She keeps the ship running. But we have this joke. She's always like, they want to talk to Beyonce. She's like, they don't want to talk to Janae. They want to talk to Beyonce. So true. I'm like, man, I'm like, there's a team of staff here. Contact us. Let's talk to y'all. I have to do CEO stuff, or I have to do something else, or I
just anything but just talking to you all the damn time.
Like, geez, talk to them. They're like, no, I hire Beyonce. I want to talk to Beyonce right now, all day.
Right, like, now. I want to talk to you for an hour. Do you really? Sometimes I want to send them a snapshot of my calendar and say,
no, for real.
Find some time.
Let me know. Because if you find an hour, I'll cut whatever you actually needed down to probably 20 minutes, and then I'll have 40.
40 minutes. So just chill.
So you find me an hour.
I will do that for you. How have you dealt with the transition from like going from corporate, you know, working on the music piece, to then being a freelancer, to then running your own agency?
What a transition. I mean, I guess the biggest transition, I always say, I think the first 2 years of the agency, it's like we had clients and things and initiatives, and I was really big on building out a community aspect to our company. And so we did a lot of community-driven things, events and partnerships. And that stuff was all great outside of client work. But I think during that time, I always say, like, I thought I was building the business, but the business was building me. There was so much about me that I had to figure out, learn, grow in or grow out of.
And unlearn.
Really unlearn, right? Learning, unlearning, making mistakes, falling down, getting back up. Do I want to do this? Do I not? Oh my God, I've walked so far. I can't turn around anyway. So just keep on walking, girl. Like all those things. Let me breathe real quick. Oh, hurry up. Cause something around the corner. We got to go. It's just so much stuff. And I think one of the bigger transitions too is realizing that, like, you know, you're a shark. If I need a dollar for something, right? I have to make the dollar. It's not going to appear in my account in 2 weeks because I've clocked in somewhere. Like, because, you know, jobs, you can kind of half-ass a job, and if you wanted to still get paid, you know, until they decide to fire you maybe, or you quit, or you find something else to do. But, you know, it's guaranteed. It's just safe. You got that little net under you. When you're a full-time entrepreneur, you don't have that net. I mean, you are the net. Like, you got to go out there and get it, or it's literally not
going.
And I don't think society necessarily, my family's a bit entrepreneurial, so I was able to see both sides of the coin, I think, growing up enough to know that. But I don't think society in general prepares you for a possible life of having to create your luck, create your opportunity, create your income, create your lifestyle, it's great once you get it down. But
yeah, but those first few years.
Yeah, because no one's like, ding dong, email, call, text, hey, why aren't you at your desk? It's 9:30, it's 10 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock, it's 12 noon. Why aren't you working? There's no one to do that. You have to do that for yourself. I mean, and it takes all types of things. I mean, I think it's a never ending, for me anyway. I'm so unorthodox and creative minded a lot of times. I do have to work. Everybody's like, you're the most organized person I know. I'd be like, I guess. I mean, I am, but I'm still.
But you had to work at it.
I'm like, yeah, I had to work at it. It's a lot of discipline, a lot of time management. Again, the calendar, saving grace, because if it's not in there, it's not happening, and that's okay with me. Wasn't in the calendar, you know, doesn't exist. Moving on, but you know, that the transition, I think that was the biggest thing for me, is understanding that, like, if I'm going to do this, I got to be all in and I have to make things happen. I can't wait for them to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's different necessarily than corporate. Also, you know, you're the decision maker. You might have a mentor, or you might be able to lean on some of your team or some people on your staff in certain areas of expertise, but ultimately, even then, they are looking for you to say yay or nay. You have to say yes or no. You have to say, we going left, we going right. And
be decisive about it.
Decisive and quick. And like, I think about this thing that, I think it was Warren Buffett. He said something about how he only makes 3 major decisions or something in a day. And like, a lot of CEOs don't make a lot of decisions in a day. And you want to get to the point where you only have to make a couple of decisions in a day, because everything is so structured and you have stuff in place. But when you do, not yet, right? So it's like, everybody's asking you for something.
Yeah.
Like, it was like working at corporations, I'm just a part of the structure. Important part, but I'm a part of this piece. There's always somebody else that I had to answer to, or, you know, there's a chain. It's nothing like being at the top of that chain. And looking back, I worked with a lot of the CEOs, and it was like, you get why you don't see them all the time. They're hard to reach, why their schedules look like they do, why they enjoy the leisure time when they do it and the way they do it, right? Mm-hmm. Why they get paid so much.
Like, and why they're out at 3:30, like clockwork. It's because they're up at 6.
Yeah. No, literally, it's nothing like that. Someone's always asking you for something. Mm-hmm. Always. I mean, always. I think that's like my life trademark at this point, is someone is always asking for something. Like, it's very rare that somebody's bringing me some. They're asking me for something, which is okay, but it gets a little exhausting, I think, because I have so many conversations in a day. It's ridiculous. So many conversations, so many threads of conversations, so many thoughts, so many things on the schedule. I have to be 3 steps ahead constantly. Like, I'm in today, I don't know what day it is in July, but like, I'm in October right now.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, honestly, I'm in January some days.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Okay, now I'm looking at March. What we doing for Southwest Southwest? What's up?
What's next? Like, you know, but also having to stay present still in a way. Like, I'm present and I'm focused on what's right in front of me too. So it's definitely a lot of responsibility. And don't get me wrong, it's a lot of fun. But I think we talk enough about the fun parts, or we show it on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
Like, ooh, private.
They see the fun parts. They don't see the
accolades. They see all that, but they do not see me looking absolutely crazy in here. Multiple times, most days. They don't see me having to work in my office, at my co-working space, on the balcony, in the bed, in the kitchen, in the living room, because I need to like reframe my mind. They don't see that you have to deal with things like payroll and taxes.
And taxes.
And healthcare and businesses. And I mean, this is so much stuff. Mm-hmm. Again, aside from like, I have an entire identity that's not attached to my business. I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a friend, like, I'm a philanthropist, like, I'm a human, I'm a resident.
Still showing up in your community.
Mm-hmm. Still showing up and trying to be there for those that you love. Because a lot of us are working hard to, you know, break generational curses, be able to provide for ourselves and our loved ones, or loved ones to come, right? Mm-hmm. Or to help change the world and make life easier for people that look like us, or people that we think deserve it, or whatever your why is. It's so funny that while working to provide for those whys, to answer those whys, we often are stretched to spend time with those people in those areas. I had a lot more time when I was in corporate to be with friends, be with family, donate my time to the causes I believe in, do extracurricular things, because I didn't have to think so much. I had to come into a place 5 days a week, relatively on time, do my assigned tasks, go home. Probably he's gonna follow me home because, you know, music industry will email you at 2 a.m. You better respond. But okay, even so, yeah. Again, I go home, I go to happy hour, I go to a concert, I go to sleep, I cook, wake up, do it again, weekend, party it up, whatever, plan out a vacation, go on vacation with my friends, talk on the phone, you know, all this stuff. Now, it's like, listen, if you're getting my time outside of this business, count yourself blessed.
Blessed.
And lucky, okay? Like, everybody running me down. Like, my mom, love her. But, you know, I live all the way in Atlanta now. So, you know, it's not the same as me being in New York. Friends who need me, again, I'm the eldest sibling. Like,
your phone stay lit up.
Stay lit up. Like, and then I'm the friend. I'm the advice friend. Like, I'm the advice friend. I'm also the organizer friend. So if we're doing anything or anybody wants to do anything, I'm also the what we doing tonight friend. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Sometimes people be like, Janae don't answer her phone. I can't.
I don't want to. I just got
mentally enabled. The phone is in another room, actually. I'm watching Sopranos. Leave me alone. And I'll talk
that. I completely disconnect on Sundays. I fall off the face of this earth. I don't know who you are. Outside of my fiance, I'll talk to you.
The biggest pet peeve I have is people hitting me up on Sunday when Monday's right there.
It's right there.
It's right there. It's right there. It's literally right here. And we all
could not have waited 12 hours.
Seen it all. I'm like, no, honestly, you hit me up about someone on a Sunday, you might not even catch me on Monday because I'm gonna be pissed. I'm gonna need to breathe because you have to understand this boundary. I work a 4-day work week. I end up working more than that, but any other days I work outside of the fours because I want to, because I feel creative, because whatever. I really had to, because I was definitely on a 24/8 loop for years. And it's unhealthy. So I definitely, and I never liked any of that. So I was like, okay, yeah, let's actually figure this out. So this way your breaks or your rest or your, you know, your restoration, your fun, whatever that is, it's already programmed into your life and not just something when you feel completely burnt out and whatever. Burnout can still happen because at the end of the day, your CO is a lot of stuff to do, but dealing with so many people all the time. But Monday, you know, through Wednesday, I try to handle all client things. Thursday is admin day, where I take care of a lot of business stuff that wasn't able to in the week. Friday, I don't know what Brown to Perfection is. I tell my staff, I don't know any of you. I don't know who you are. Don't, if it's not a literal fire,
don't call me.
Don't. I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to these clients. They know the schedule as well. Nothing. It's not happening. I'll talk to you on Monday. I want you to enjoy your weekend too. Leave me alone. It's over with.
I tell my team that after 1 p.m. on Friday, there is nothing on this planet that you need to do after 1 p.m. on a Friday.
Nothing. And I'm like, y'all don't work on Friday. I appreciate y'all. I think you guys are awesome. Bomb.
Log off.
It's over with. We don't have something happening with a brand or with a client. Like, wow. No. Go live your life, please. Because I need you back on Monday. Fresh.
Right. Fresh and restored.
Right the ground running. I love a Monday. I'll be like, woo. It's Monday. Because you've taken time. Not, oh, God, it's Monday. You know, like that'll happen, but you don't want that to be every Monday of your life. You don't want to, you know, and whenever I start feeling like I'm looking forward to the weekends, I know something's wrong.
Something's off.
Okay. I got to switch, move some things around. It's crazy.
That's one of the things that I learned about my schedule is like, I had a great schedule and it was working. It was amazing. And then over like a 4-week period, it just got, I hated it. And I was like, you know what? I need to make a change again, right? So like now I need to implement no meeting days. I need to implement, you know, I need to get back control of this process so that I can make sure that I'm operating at my optimum efficiency.
Yes.
But yeah.
Missing out either, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think we do this FOMO thing, especially when you're a business owner. Again, it's your baby. This has to work. And so you think that you have to overextend yourself in every single area and never miss any opportunity. You know, never, you know, oh, because this is not going to happen if I don't do it right now. Rushing around, like, slow down. It's all right. You're only one person. No matter how big your company is, you're just still one person. So you got to figure out, like you said, what really works. And, you know, people will wait.
They really will.
People will wait. You just have to establish the flow. Mm-hmm. That's it, you know? And if they don't, then they're not the client.
They're not the client for you. And I'm completely okay with that. And one of the things that I've been working with my team on is also being okay with that, of like understanding that.
Yeah, been there.
You know, understanding that I'm not going to let anyone devalue you or devalue your work. And
but
so
you got to detach a little bit.
You got to detach. You have to.
More of these. Like, do our job, do it well, like to our standards, and move on if that's what's gonna happen. Move on. Yeah. But you know, you can't tie, your talents, your value, your expertise to the outcomes of one client ever, one project, one campaign. How crazy would that be? Imagine if athletes tied their entire careers to a game. A season. What? That makes no sense. It's just one game. It's just one season. If it doesn't go as well as you thought, you learn from it, you double back, and then you come back.
And you come back harder. You rest for a couple weeks, and then you start training again to come back harder. Yep. And I have that mentality, I think, because I was a student athlete, of like, you know, like I'm going to train for this. What? Yeah. I didn't win that time. But
I'm getting next time.
You're not going to catch me again. You're not going to catch me again.
Not going to make the same mistake twice. So bring it on.
So I will say that, I mean, this has really been like one of my favorite interviews that I've done so far. This is really, really good. I do have one more question for you. Because I emailed, I said I was going to ask this about your childhood. So what is one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self if you were talking to her now?
How old are we talking?
However you want your younger, however, because everyone has a younger person, like a younger vision in their mind.
My mind. It's just funny because a good friend of mine, incredible journalist and writer, he's a writer, period. I'm not even gonna call him a journalist. He's just an incredible writer, the best writer walking the face of earth. That's my friend. But he asked me the other day what I would tell 17-year-old me, and I realized that he's so specific because I remembered where he was. But when you asked me just now, I thought of me at like 5 or 6. So that's who I'm gonna
talk
to.
That's who you need to talk to.
I would tell her that she is incredible, that she's different, and it's okay. It's actually the best thing about you. You aren't like anyone else. I mean, nobody. You'll have friends and people that you have similar interests with, but no one is you. And that is your literal superpower. Life is interesting, but you really can do and be anything you put your mind to, just like your mom said. She wasn't lying. You know, you don't have to choose one part of you to build your life out on. You can do all the things, as long as you plan it out and put your best effort forward. Nothing lasts forever. Particularly bad things, bad times. Bad times don't mean you have a bad life. Making a mistake doesn't mean you're a bad person. Something not working out doesn't make you a bad person. It's not a reflection of you whatsoever. It's just something that didn't work out. It's just like Oprah says, you know, you were just supposed to take a turn because that's the way to where you're supposed to go, not this way anymore. It's there's a map. There's like a fate map, and just keep walking on it. Always do your personal best. That is all you can do. And that's all that life and the universe expects from you. God's got you covered. Like, I think there's, yeah, and just don't give up. Don't give up. Just don't. And again, when the picture changes, you know, when the direction changes, walk. You're supposed to go that way. Don't get too stuck on why you have to turn left. Why I thought I was supposed to keep walking straight. Why do I have to turn left? Why? When the road to turn straight ain't even there no more, you have to go left anyway. So girl, just walk. You'll see by the time where it's time to take another turn, you'll see why you had to take the left turn. So I guess those are all the things that I would say to her, and just, you know, keep your head up. Beautifully, wonderfully made. It's a real thing. Smart. Your love for people is not an accident. You know, just give up your best self and you will be fine. Yeah, I think that's what I would say.
Wow, that is beautiful. I love it. Wow, that was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
I love those types of questions I've learned. And I always realize too, sometimes things will follow you. Conversation, topics, themes, things. And I think it's always the right times in your life. And you got to pay attention to messages, repeated messages. And I think that's been coming up a lot is, you know, what would I tell my younger self? And I think it's a matter of reflecting on how far I've come and thinking, you know, whatever I consider problems right now or stress right now, at one point in time, I would have never imagined that I would even have the opportunity to have this stress, these problems, or that I would be doing so much and feeling like I can actually make a difference. And it's just, you gotta return to a place of gratitude and operate from a place of gratitude. And I think one of the easiest ways to do that is to remember how far you've come and kind of revisit that person and be like, ooh, if you only knew, girl, you would not be tripping over your little second grade crush, girl. You got stuff to do, places to go, people to see, cuter boys to talk to, like, girl, money to make.
A company to run, the world to change.
World and stuff, yes. Like, what? You about to have, girl, you going to have an iPhone that you go work off of one day. Girl,
don't worry about it off the iPhone, you know? Always.
Yeah, so, yeah, no, I love that question. This was an incredible interview. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, and just, you continue to do incredible work as well.
Thank you.
Nothing like, you know, seeing other people who look like me doing incredible things on their own terms. I think that is what life is about. That's the true, you know, for me, that's like,
that is the
truest gift.
Yeah.
Is being able to see that. I think it's incredible. And I think it means a lot more than we probably know right now in this current framework of society. I think we'll be able to look back and see how it changed the world. There weren't a bunch of Black-owned agencies.
There weren't.
20 years ago, this was not a thing. 10 years ago, even, it was very rare. I mean, there's agencies that we know, popular Black-owned agencies, that are 20 years in, just getting sort of like, real recognition. It's crazy. But I think the more of us there are who are doing incredible work, I think the more people will say that they can. And maybe it's not even agencies. Maybe it's something else the world needs. But I'm excited to continue to see people follow their dreams, whether it's within, you know, the framework of another company or whether they're starting their own company or, you know, whatever the case is. I just, forward movement.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I appreciate that. I respect you so much. And I thank you for your time.